Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's October 9th, 2015. You're listening to the best poker cast on the interwebs. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long. So, did you notice the southern twang there?
Not really. No, I didn't really notice that.
Maybe by next week. The second week of being out here at the Pearl River Poker Open Ante Up Tour Series, maybe I'll have that twang going.
You having your sweet tea?
Oh, yes, every single day.
Excellent.
I'm going to come back. I actually already, you'll probably notice this on the financial statements next month. I bought a second plane ticket on the way home. It's for my whole body to be able to fit because of how well it is eating and drinking here. Usually when I'll get the unsweet tea, right?
Right.
No calories, right? So it doesn't matter what else I'm eating. At least I'm saving calories on the liquid part of my meal, right?
Yeah.
But you can't turn down sweet tea.
No.
And if you're in the South and you're, you have to say unsweet tea, and then you get that look like, what? I guess we can figure out a way to take the sugar out of it. But man, eating here is great. The first night I got into it, I flew in. I drove over here to this great resort here, Pearl River, and I stopped away somewhere to eat in the way. And I see a sign. They're like, new menu item, grit sticks.
Ooh.
And I'm like, I don't know what that is, but I know I need it.
You gotta try it.
Only in the South, all right? So it's been a lot of fun here. We're at Pearl River Resort here. It's in Choctaw, Mississippi, dead center in the middle of Mississippi. So lots of ways to get here. But I hope folks show up, record a little bit early here to let you know about the main event that starts, I believe, Friday, right?
Yeah.
If you win that, you'd be here on the cover of our November issue, in addition to winning a bunch of other prize money, $100,000 guarantee. And remember that room rates are $49 during the week and $69 on weekends. And I am recording the show in my spacious room right now. I promise you, this is the best $69 room you'll ever stay in.
Yeah.
You know, last time I was up here was February when we were working out the details of this, and they hadn't finished the $70 million in renovations at that point. They had the casino open, but not the hotel. And I was in one of the renovated rooms in Silver Star, which is the resort across the street. That was nice. I thought that was nice, right? So now I'm back here, and the hotel's open, and wow, it's just so nice to be here. I can't tell you.
That's awesome.
So we had a nice multi-day to start the thing off last weekend, and then of course, like I said, this weekend is a multi-flight main event, and two other events every day up until then, satellites. Come on out. It's been nice to see some folks already, and I know lots of other folks told me they're going to be down here for the main event, so I'm looking to have a real fun weekend here in Mississippi.
Yeah, I mean, Scott and I put everything aside to record 2 days early. To tell you about this, so the least you could do is go over there and bust Scott's chops a little bit and play in the main event.
I tell you, they made a really nice tournament room here. Again, a lot of this was so hard to imagine when I was here last time because, the casino was open, but they hadn't, obviously he didn't have the room where he wanted to put the tournament in set up for a tournament because it was, 8 months before
right.
He even opened to have an event, right? But he showed me when I walked in, and I'm like, yeah, I think this is going to be a really good place to hold your event. But now to actually walk in and see it with the table set up, it's like I guess it might have been a nightclub in the past, or at least some kind of like dining venue. So it's all – the whole resort here is curved. Like, so the hotel is a big curved building, which is kind of cool. You get out of the room and you're walking around the curve to the so the room down there is part of the curve, right? So have all the tables in there. They have, I think, 7-8 big screen TVs with the football and baseball games on, which is nice, plus big, huge clocks. But then they have a curved bar in the back, which was used to be a bar, right? And so back there, he sets up sandwiches and chips and sodas and water. And so there's a nice little spread for all the events. And it's inside glass. You know, it's all glassed off, right? So you can see the whole casino. But you don't hear the whole casino.
Right. Well, it's walled off.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's almost the best of both worlds. That's what I was telling somebody when I was sitting there, and I sit on the little ledge where I work, and so I can kind of lure it over the tournament and the and the whole casino. But it's really kind of cool because I've been to a lot of places where, and I prefer this, when the poker room is set off from the casino, so you don't get all the, you know, clangity clang and wheel of fortune, you know, when you're trying to make a big decision, right? Or the smoke wafting in from wherever. But, you know, what you miss by that is you don't feel, you feel like you're in a banquet hall, right?
Mm-hmm.
You don't feel like you're at a casino. And so I think we really got the best of both worlds here. You get that, you can look out and you know you're at a casino, you see the energy and people walking by and stuff, but you don't get the smoke or the sound or anything like that. And you're in a clean, comfortable place to play poker with big TVs. So definitely did well in setting this thing up, and the room rates are great. So, last call. Get on the road and come out here to Choctaw and see us.
That's right. Details, AntieUpMagazine.com/Pearl River. This next item, is this for reals?
For reals?
Is it for reals? Is PokerStars really back in the USA?
You know, I messaged a friend the other day, a girl from high school that I haven't really talked to much, and I said, totes.
Toads, my goats.
And she wrote back. She's like, I am laughing so hard, Scott. I have never heard anybody but the youngest female teachers at my school use the word totes.
Totes my goats.
And certainly not anybody, certainly never a male, and certainly no one as old as you. I'm like, oh!
There's nothing more pathetic than somebody in their 40s trying to use the lingo of
not
the high schoolers.
Successfully using it.
Just, successfully using it, but still, it's, you see them with their hat screwed on sideways, and then they're like, dude, you're 40. Just
give it up.
Act like it, okay?
But no, this is for real. So PokerStars is back in the USA, and you know, I think we used that line a couple months ago when they were doing their fantasy sports, right?
Yeah.
But no, this is actual real online poker, right? So the New Jersey Division of Gaming Enforcement has said Amaya Incorporated, the parent company PokerStars and Full Tilt, has the green light to offer online poker in New Jersey in conjunction with Resorts Casino Hotel. And but no word from Amaya yet on when its games will begin. But it sounds like it's going to be not just poker, but also the casino games. And pretty soon, folks that are in New Jersey, whether you live there or not, or just visiting, will be able to play on PokerStars again. I missed them so much.
And, you know, we were talking a little bit about this before the show, and we were sort of discussing what it would mean. Would it mean all of a sudden more people start playing again because they loved PokerStars and they didn't want to try the other ones? Or would it mean everybody who's playing at the other ones will say, well, I love the, you know, I love the platforms of Stars and Full Tilt, so they're going to flee the other ones and go there? It might unite everybody in one site or one company, or will it just be another site that, you know, is just struggling in New Jersey? So it'll be fun to see how it pans out, and hopefully it's a kick in the butt for other places to get Stars, and then Stars could grow, and then the country will take notice or something. You know, maybe this could be the thing that kickstarts some stuff.
Yeah, we'll see. I noticed right away that the Golden Nugget shut down its free play site. I don't know. They must not have had a real game partner yet, but obviously a free site's not going to survive when PokerStars is there. So I think that's the first fallout.
Yeah.
I think you're right. Players are obviously very comfortable with the Stars they remember. Obviously, it's a new parent company now, so I don't know how different it is, but I would imagine not much. So, you know, people were unhappy with the other offerings. Obviously, they're going to come back, and then we know they're going to be happy with Stars because Stars just crushed the world when it actually was able to play to the world, right?
Right.
But, you know, the other big competition is WSOP.com, and you know, that's a pretty powerful brand as well, too. Probably the most powerful brand in poker. So, certainly, I think, I don't think there's going to be any, I don't think one of those is going to win out. So I think those two are still going to, so you're still going to have competition, which is good. But bad because it'd be great if you just had one site where you had all the seven people that seem to be playing online poker, together. But obviously, I think the big thing we're still waiting for, is, and Maya has been huge on this, is trying to get online poker in California. And they figure if they get it in California, you're able to link it up with Nevada and Jersey and Delaware and wherever else, then that's going to turn the tides. But it sounds like that's dead for the rest of the year in California once again. So I think that's going to be the big thing. But it's certainly worth celebrating that PokerStars is back. So I don't have a trip planned to New Jersey yet, but I'm looking forward to my next time up there.
Absolutely. Okay, any updates? Foxwoods Casino Resort in Connecticut, Jackson Rancheria Casino Resort, and Red Hawk Casino in California are the first rooms to announce they'll be a part of our second annual Restock the Shelves Food Bank Initiative that we run with Blue Shark Optics, and it'll be January 18th, 2016. Get details on those events, including how you can volunteer for Team Annie Up by visiting annieupmagazine.com/restock, and encourage your favorite poker room to host an event too. I think it's gonna be bigger and better than ever this year. I really do. I think everyone saw that we pulled it off, and now they want to get in on it and help their communities. And I'm real excited about it.
Yeah, I haven't had, obviously I've been busy with the tournament here. I haven't had time to reach out with all the rooms that participated last year, but that's, you know, first on my list here. These three obviously all participated last year, and they were like right back to me before I even had a chance to email them. So that's very exciting, encouraging, and fully expect that all those that partnered with us last year will be back, and hopefully twice as that many. So,
yeah, it's going to be great. Also, we'll have staterooms in our control, meaning that at our guaranteed published rate, right, is what we mean by that. For the January 24th poker cruise out of Los Angeles through November 2nd. So you better book quickly. don't forget we have a November 7th cruise out of Tampa coming up, as well as 2016 cruises out of Port Canaveral, Seattle, and Tampa. Get all the details of all these sailings, as well as two other Florida sailings, at AnnieUpCruises.com. All right, each week we spotlight a listener who calls our hotline at 206-424-6145 or emails us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Floor and Hand of the Week, we send them something cool. This week's prize is an upgraded membership to PokerRadius.com, poker's best social networking site and home to the AnnieUp group discussions. Comes from Mark Helly. He's, thanks to you guys, I started playing other games... and then he puts in parentheses, stud, stud 8, PLO, and his favorite PLO 8. Oh, Mark, you're dead to me. He says, as you both are mixed game players, I was wondering about the Poker Players Championship, you know, the old 50K horse event. And he wanted to know what we thought of its structure. He says, I think horse was too focused on the stud games, but the current format has too many games. I think a six-game format would be best. Two flop games, two stud games, two draw games. It'd be best for determining the best all-around player. Probably crappy no-limit hold'em, PLO 8, stud, stud 8, no-limit, deuce of 7 single draw, and Badoogie are his six games. How many games do you think should be played, and what games do you think should be included in a mixed-game tourney to determine the best all-around poker player?
That's a great question, isn't it?
Yeah, and we've kind of touched on these things in the past, but never really put it all together in the one kind of question. And it's tough. I think he's right. I think flop, stud, and draw should always be a part of it, but not too many.
Right.
And I think six is probably about right. It's one more than horse, but it's quite a few fewer than what they do now. Right. I mean, I guess the one now, it's like, how many games are in the new one? It's not eight, right? It's more than that now.
Well, yeah. Well, I think the players. Championship is still eight, but then they also have a 10-game mix.
Oh, right, they had the 10-game mix. Yeah, okay. So the players, even so, eight is kind of pushing it.
It is, isn't it? You know, because here's the thing, and this is what I wrote back to him. I'm like, you know, one of the things that I do hear players in horse tournaments complain about is that stud players have an advantage, right? Because you get three-fifths of the game is stud.
Yeah.
And then the other two are flop games. So and I think people have built off that horse model just because that's just a popular model. for whatever reason. Actually, I think hose is probably the better way to get rid of Raz. I mean, you still have that low ball in the stud, and then you get a little bit, it's more even. But, you know, when I thought about this, I came up with what I said my base level would be just four games. And I know people want probably more than four for this whole thing, right?
Right.
But I said No Limit Hold'em, Pot Limit Omaha, Stud 8, and Triple Draw Deuce to 7.
Triple draw, not the no limit single draw.
Right, triple draw. So my reasoning is it gives you one no limit option, right?
Mm-hmm.
One hold'em option, one pot limit option, one split pot option, one stud option, and one draw option. And I said I went with the triple draw to balance out, you know, limit versus NO and no limit and pot limit. So again, you had two limit games. One no limit game, one pot limit game. So depending on your play there, you get one split pot game, so you have that kind of thing, and then you've got the three variations. So I think really that touches on everything without having an advantage to any particular player. But then I went on to say, you know, all right, I know no one's willing to win a player's championship with just four games. That seems kind of funny, right?
Yeah.
So if you did an 8-game mix, I went with no limit hold'em, limit hold'em, Pot Limit Omaha, Limit Omaha 8, Stud 8, Triple Draw Deuce to 7, and No Limit Deuce to 7.
Jeez. That's a lot. I mean, I think, you know, I think I agree with him that 8 does seem like too many games. I think that as long as the discipline is being represented, there's no reason to duplicate it.
Right.
Now, and the thing about his, I like his list. I don't like the PLO 8, not just because I don't like the game, but also because the pot limit is already a thing that's different. Omaha is its own thing. So
exactly.
We have the 8 in the stud 8. So why have two split pot games? So get rid of one of them. Getting rid of the PLO 8 is perfect. Just make it PLO. I like his 6. Well, you know what? The one I don't like is Badoogie.
Yeah, and I actually told him that, too. I'm like, I'm a big fan of Badoogie. I love playing it. I'll call it in the home game all the time. But it's really... It's the Baskin-Robbins flavor of the month, right?
You know, yeah.
It hasn't been around a long time. It may not be around a long time either. It's just not really an established championship game. You know, there's no Badoogie bracelet. I don't remember, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are Badoogie... I think there was a Badoogie bracelet.
Was there?
Yeah, wow. I think there was. But the thing I like was be 5-card draw. Let's have a game that, you know, in the draw segment where it's to get the best hand and we're playing regular poker, not trying to get the worst hand and different suits. And, you know, we already have the worst hand thing in Deuce to 7 single draw. So let's make a regular poker game for the 5-card draw where there's no information and serious bluffing will go on there too. I mean, I know there's bluffing in single draw, but I think regular 5-card draw, I would substitute that for Badoogie if I'm going to stick with the 2-2-2 format.
It's such a boring game, though.
Yeah, but how is it any different than Badoogie? I mean, why is Badoogie exciting? It's not.
Yeah, well, Badoogie, because you've got some strategy and drawing. You've got more rounds. You know, just straight old missionary position 5-card draw is the most boring game ever.
Right? Well, so is regular stud. You know, I mean, regular stud is hard, but it's not exciting.
Stud.
Well, it's there's more skill involved in stud, but I wouldn't kill that game. I mean, I plus when you talk about the best overall player, you know what I mean? There's no in the draw category. There is nothing that's real poker in there as far as making an actual hand.
Right.
So well, this gets regular poker in there.
I will say one of the games I do miss from PokerStars was the pot limit 5-card draw. So if you're gonna do it, I think it needs to be pot limit at least.
Oh yeah, or I was gonna say even no limit.
Yeah, no limit. Again, I think no limit kind of ruins it, though. It's kind of like Omaha. If you do no limit, Omaha kind of ruins it because you need to have that cap there to keep people in. But whatever. I could go either way on that.
Yeah, but I like his list, and I like his suggestion of 6 games. It's one more than horse. It's 2 fewer than the one they're doing now. And it gives you a nice little variety of 2 flops, 2 studs, and 2 draws. And I kind of agree with Mark here.
I just don't like the single draw no limit on Deuce to 7. I mean, it's a fun game. And I just, when you're talking about a championship, they're really all it is. That's chicken, that's what they call it. You know?
Yeah.
Right? There's really not a lot of strategy in terms of the poker part of it. It's just, you know, hey, I'm willing to put you all in right now, and who's going to blink?
Yeah.
And that's why I kind of like, you know, my list with the triple draw, so at least it's, you know, limited, and there's a little bit more poker in it rather than just straight out bluffing. But nonetheless.
Well, I like, in the stud games, you can't do a no limit, but I like in the other two, there's a one, there's a no limit option, there's a pot limit option, and then in the draws, if you did no limit and then you did my five card draw regular missionary, then you'd have a no limit option and you'd have a limit option. I realize it's kind of boring with just two betting rounds, but maybe you do make it pot limit, so it mimics the no limit hold'em and pot limit hold'em.
That would get you a second pot limit game too.
Which, yeah,
is really kind of an underutilized skill.
Yeah, but that's an interesting point, and you wonder if they might eventually revise that eight game. You know, I don't know, maybe not. I loved it when it was the horse. I mean, I really did. We at the time it came out, we were really embracing horse as a Antiup nation. In our home game, we were embracing those games, and not that we still don't, but we just don't play anymore. So we got to start playing to embrace things. But
you can't do it a horse. I mean, I remember back when we were complaining about that, right? So you play horse for like 7 days or however long that tournament went, right?
Right.
And then you get on TV, and all of a sudden it's all no limit hold'em, and that you know, burned our toast, right?
Yeah.
So, but the reality is, I mean, that's every tournament now is no limit hold'em. So that's got to be part of it, right? And then pot limit is just such part of the fabric now. So you got to have those things in there. So, you know, even if you just added those two in, maybe, and kept horse, maybe drop Raz. And I was that's sacrilegious to the Antiup Nation. That I could probably get behind.
Yeah.
That's six games.
All right, find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and you're not sure what the proper ruling should have been? Email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com and we'll have Snoqualmie Casino Director of Poker, Elliot Schechter, tell you how he would have ruled. This week's prize is 1 month of free poker strategy videos from One Hand at a Time, home of poker instructional videos online. Antiup listeners save $30 by registering at onehandatatime.com/antiup. Comes from Andrew Harris. Says, we're at the final table of a 50-player tournament. I raise to 10,000 and it folds to the cutoff, who shoves for 27,000. The dealer places an all-in button in front of the player, but then slides the player's cards into the muck. A floor is called and rules the all-in bet stands and the player's hand is dead. It folds back around to me and all I have to do is call to win the hand. The dealer still runs out the board, and he puts in parentheses, why, and I take the pot.
Ellie says, wow, tough spot for the re-raiser. Tournament directors and casino operators try hard to not eliminate players from tournaments because of the result of a floor decision. In this case, I would have ruled 10,000 of your opponent's chips. The amount of the bet to him would have to stay in the pot, and the hand would be dead. I'm assuming the hand in dispute was irretrievable. As I recommend to all poker players, if you're not being pushed the pot or trying to fold, don't let go of your cards.
Yeah, that's so bad. And it's... I remember when we used to see Sam a lot, we'd play at his poker room a lot, you know, he would always say, you know, you can't end a tournament without the cards being seen. Like, you can't end someone's tournament. You just can't.
Right.
So the decision has to be somehow this player survives somehow. I don't know. I don't know how you do it, though.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm here, you know, Eric Comer is running this tournament for us. He runs the tournament for Beau Rivage, and we've been talking a lot about tournaments this week. Here at the Pearl River Poker Open, antiupmagazine.com/Pearl River. And we were talking about this, not Andrew's situation, but somehow we just talked about scenarios. And he was very dead set, too. Yeah, you just don't take somebody out of the tournament on a dealer mistake or dealer slash player mistake here, I guess. I mean, I don't want a dealer here. You know, you're here to play poker, so you gotta get eliminated playing poker. And I imagine he would rule the same way that Elliot here and Sam does. So you know the really good tournament directors that know. And I had a long conversation with them, too, about just how difficult some of these situations are. And we certainly know it. And from doing this every week, you know, sometimes there's these people send in stuff and they're like, oh, my gosh, I'm glad I'm not the tournament director there, right?
Yeah.
He's like, you know, the guiding influence is you got to do what's right for the player. And
absolutely.
I can't imagine being a player here. And really, I went back to Andrew and asked him some more details. And because I'm like, you know, I don't understand how the player's cards got taken. And he said, yeah, I was in seat 9. I'm like, okay, that makes sense. Or not makes sense, but it makes more sense.
It's more understandable,
right?
Yeah.
Right, exactly. And I'm like, you know, I can't believe any tournament director would go to a player and say, hey, you know, unless this guy was just super sloppy with his cards, and say, hey, sorry, you're done. You don't get to see a flop. And it's and at the same time, it's really tough to the other guy, right? Because, you know, it's all in, and, you know, he's not done anything wrong, and this guy lost his cards. So, but I would think any reasonable player would think that Elliot's decision here is fair.
Yeah, it's bizarre to me that and then he says, why'd they run off the board? Which is interesting. I wonder if that's something to do with, like, state.
Yeah, I told him that has to be state. I mean, there's no way you can push a pot to, you know, when you've got it all in.
Right.
All in button out there, and all of a sudden there's no cards, and then somebody's being pushed a thing. And I mean, it's easy to explain if you're actually there, right?
But, yeah.
You know,
if they're reviewing the tapes.
And here's the other thing you got to remember too, and this is what people, tournament directors have to remember, and the good ones know this as well too. And not only are you trying to be as fair to the players, you also are cognizant of the fact that you have a gaming commission, you have your bosses that you have to report to. And in situations like this, it's very likely that someone's going to complain to someone, right? No matter how you rule,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And so at that point, you got to be real careful and make sure everything is done as properly as you possibly can. So when those tapes are pulled and people look at it, at least you're not getting yourself into more trouble, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you actually have to run out the board here and then do it by the book, even though it's immaterial at this point.
Man. Hey, we got a complete O'Malley's move today. Here comes part one.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week is the last hand from the 1-2 No Limit Hold'em Casino Cash Game. And once again, the overconfident, know just enough to get himself in trouble villain is back. He busted out about an hour ago and re-bought for another 200. He's slipped a bit and now sits with 175. We're in the big blind with about 325. The blinds post, the under the gun and plus one fold, all three MPs call, the cutoff folds, the hijack and main villain calls, the button folds, the small blind completes, and we're in the big blind with the king of diamonds, king of clubs. We are not going to fool around here. With so many callers in the hand, we want to thin the field significantly. We make it $25 to go. Everyone folds, except the hijack, and we go to the flop with about $60 in the pot. The 10 of spades, 10 of diamonds, tray of spades comes down. This is a pretty safe flop, nothing too dangerous. However, this villain is capable of playing any two cards and is the best player at the table. Just ask him. We want to discourage him from drawing, and wouldn't mind winning this thing right now. Plus, I think we've got the best of it at this point. We're first to act and make a $45 bet into the pot. Our opponent makes the call. With about 150 in the pot, the ace of diamonds comes on the turn. We know that just because an overcard to our pocket pair came does not necessarily mean our opponent has that. However, I feel like pot control is the best strategy to employ here, and we are out of position. We check. With 150 in the pot, our opponent bets his remaining 105. So, did he hit his ace, or is he trying to represent an ace, sensing our weakened hand? What's the move?
I think it's about 50-50 that he has an ace, so I can't make a case for folding when it's 60 bucks more to me to potentially win a pot of after Chris readjusted my numbers to 270.
But you still think it's the right number, right? You still think?
Tell me what the pot is.
But you still think that you can't fold here, right?
Well, I wouldn't say I can't fold. I said I can't make a case for folding. You know, obviously the dealer could just steal my cards, like the call before. Put me out of my misery. But I don't know. That's a small price to pay for a pretty decent pot while on a coin flip. I mean, again, if it's 50-50, which is what I kind of think it is, right? Then that's an easier or tougher decision, right? But it's not. It's 60 to win 270, right? So that's not a coin flip in terms of payoff,
right?
And if I really do think it's a coin flip, then I mean, why would I fold there? Now I could be wrong on 50-50. I mean, that's kind of the human error part of this, right? You know, but it seems to me that
you're saying the 50-50 is either he has an ace or he doesn't. That's kind of it. And it's kind of hard to put it on 50-50 as far as it actually being 50-50 with the information we know. So it's tough to do. But I think...
Not, so that's 50 or 50, right?
Yeah, I think I'm going to fold. It's a cash game, and I can just play another hand. I've only put a little bit in. You know, it said, you know, given what he said in part one, you know, I'm aware this guy might be floating, and he might even be on tilt. But if an ace came on the flop, I might have folded then too. So now the ace does come on the turn.
I think that's different though. I mean, here's what happened: is we checked this turn, right? And now this guy's sitting on $105. I mean, I think with a lot of hands, he's going to shove there. I think. I mean, because now all of a sudden we show weakness, now, which doesn't always mean checking on the turn is weakness. I mean, it's a pretty powerful play to check for pot control. But I mean, that's what makes me think that, you know, obviously if he has an ace, there's no reason he wouldn't shove here, right? So that's a possibility. But otherwise, if he thinks, like, you know, hey, now we're scared of that ace, we could have kings, queens, jacks, nine, something like that, and now we're scared of that ace, and he bets, and then we're going to fold. So,
all right, let's hold on a second.
That's where I get my 50-50.
Let's hold on a second. We check, and our opponent bets 105, you said. Now, you're saying it's 60 more to us, but that was the pot size, right?
Before the bet. Right, yeah.
So it's not 60 to win 100, 270. It's 105 now.
See, I totally ruined all my numbers.
So I'm folding my...
Okay, but it's still less than 50-50. Let me go ahead and fix that. 105. More to win a pot of what I had before, like 360. God, I was way off.
Yeah, you were way off. So it was 6-1 on your money last time. Now it's, you know, two and a third or so of your money. But I'm still folding. Like I said, regardless of whether the ace came on the flop or not, I just feel like, because even like you said, let's say it's 105 to win 270, and if he thinks we're a player like you, he's going to say, how could you fold? So why if he doesn't have the ace, what's he betting for? We're only beating a bluff now. That's the only thing we're beating. We're calling 105 to beat a bluff.
Right, so it depends on whether he's playing against me or you.
Yeah, and the fact that would he really be bluffing in this spot?
And I'm not saying that to be funny. I'm saying that you got to figure out the type of player.
Right, exactly.
And at every table, you're either playing against Scott or Chris.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. But I don't know if he's bluffing there. He's betting 105 right? to win 105. You know,
have a river come too. So
yeah, that's true too. I mean, we have.
I'm not too excited about that because I'm going to need two cards to win. If that's the case.
But. Yeah. All right. Well, here we go. Let's see what happens.
Hello again. Something feels different this time. He's done this before on an out-and-out bluff, but he seems much more confident this time. We've already committed $70 to this hand, but if we fold now, we're still up 50 on the night, and we haven't even come close to pot committing ourselves. If we call and lose, we're down to 145 and turn a profitable session into a losing one. Ultimately, something tells me he has an ace. It might not be a strong one, but it still beats us. We fold. Our opponent does us a favor by flashing us an ace before mucking his own cards and raking in the pot. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying, don't get married to kings. A lot of times, by the end of the hand, they're second best. I hope to see you on the felt.
All right, turned out to be a good fold, but I think it sounds like we folded for the wrong reason. It sounded like he wants to fold because he wanted to make sure we didn't end with a losing session, and that doesn't seem to be the right move, right?
I don't know. If I remember correctly, a lot of times when we're talking about hands of the week, not necessarily O'Malley, but a lot of times you'll say, I'm already up a bunch, and, you know, I'll cut my losses here, and you say that a lot, I think.
Right. No, that doesn't mean it's right.
Oh, so you're admitting that what you say all the time is wrong in your mind now. I'm confused. You're confusing the hell out of me today. I think it's that sweet tea.
Because actually, we actually get emails about this quite often, so I'm glad you brought it up. Because a lot of people vilify me. They're like, Scott, that's bad advice telling people that they should fold because they're up or whatever, you know, or make a call because they're up or fold because they're down. And so my point is that you have to know your own psyche, right? And if it's going to, if going home broke after you had a great session is going to mess you up for the next month, that's bad, right?
Yeah.
So even if you make a decision based on a bad thing or, you know, I don't want to go home broke, but you know that in the long term that's going to save you money, that's why I'm making it. We don't have all that information here on O'Malley.
Yeah.
We're just talking in a vacuum here. But that's what I'm getting at. So, and I think, you know, some of these people that call in or write in and complain are like, I think forget that. They forget that we're humans and that going home after we've just had a great run of cards and we bust in the last hand, some players aren't going to be able to shake that off. And if you can, that's great. Then you would never make a decision based on that. But a lot of players, I think, that's just going to mess with them, right? And they're going to go back to the poker room the next week, and they're going to remember, oh, my God, I had 800, and I played one last hand, and I had nothing. And, you know, and now they're going to play bad for the next couple weeks.
So now I get to take you to task again. This is awesome.
Absolutely.
Well, because you're saying it sounds like we folded for the wrong reason, but you don't know how O'Malley thinks. O'Malley may be having those thoughts that you were just saying.
It sounds like.
No, you can't say it sounds like. If he says, I'm folding for a winning session because it will screw me up if I don't have a winning session here, so I'm making the right move for myself, then it's the right reason for him, like you said. So we don't know what O'Malley's thinking.
The robotic answer that one of our listeners give me back.
Oh, man. Well, I was happy when I loved the outcome because O'Malley and I made the same move. And it was the opposite of what you did. So that's always a good thing. Because we were right, you were wrong. And you messed this thing up from beginning to end. I think you're in a diabetic coma from all the sweet tea you've been drinking.
Yeah.
But we love O'Malley, and we're glad to have him with us. And I'm even happier that we were both right and you were wrong.
All right, it's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands for situations to podcast at antiupmagazine.com. And this comes from a longtime listener, first-time contributor, O'Malley.
See, here's where you get your revenge, because now you're going to try to mislead me and you slide a hand and stuff and make me think of, you know, the wrong answer here. You're going to be like, see, you don't know what the hell you're talking about, so I can't wait for this hand.
No, I love how O'Malley, I mean, he's really... taken over that whole O'Malley's move and does a great job with it. And then every once in a while he's got hands that he doesn't think he can turn him in that, so he sends them to us and says we can use them if we want. And sometimes we do. Actually, most of the time we do.
Yeah.
Sometimes we don't. So here's one of them that I like. And as he says, as we know, he was recently married this summer.
Aww.
Congratulations. You know, I love these couples that are still in love. You know, the only couple that's still in love that's been married a long time is you and Jeannie.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's all newlyweds.
Like, yeah.
So he's on a cruise for his honeymoon. We won't take him to task for not going on any of cruise, but I said she allowed him to play one night to play cards, and they just happened to have one of those great electronic poker pro tables.
Yeah.
Is 1-2 no limit hold'em. Table was loose passive, lots of drunk players on a cruise. Awesome. I've never seen a drunk player at all on the cruise. And he says he bought in for 100 and had about 125 when this hand came up. Undergun calls, and it's folded to a middle position player who calls, and now it's called around to us on the button. So lots of people in this thing, and we have ace of spades, 10 of spades.
Ooh. You can't play that hand, only I can play that hand.
Yes, exactly.
You know,
I don't want to play that hand.
Sometimes, we're on the button, so we have some serious control here. I really, I'm going to play it professionally, and I'm just going to raise. And normally I'll raise this hand if everyone's passive behind me and we're shorthanded. I would raise with it. But we're on the button, we got all kinds of limpers, and they're all drunks. So... a lot of them are drunks, and it's a cruise ship, so you know they're terrible players, likely. I'm going to raise this hand. And we had a ton of limpers. I'm not exactly sure how many, but I might make it a big old raise, you know, just to say, hey, you're on a cruise ship. I know you want to give me your money, so let's make it like 20 or 25 and see how many of you drunken, you know, fish want to give me your cash. So, I'm in position. I've got a suited ace, a decent ace, can make Broadway, can outkick people who are tourists who love to play any ace, so they'll have ace 7 in their hand. And I don't mind raising and taking it down, and if I don't, I love being heads up with a drunken tourist at an electronic table. So let's give it a big bump here.
Yeah, I think there's two totally different schools of thought here. One is your school, which is easily defendable, and one is my school, which is easily defendable. which is there's a lot of dead money here, a lot of drunks, and we've got a hand that draws really well. So just limp and see what happens. So I think the key here, as always, is knowing what we're going to do after the flop.
Right.
See the flop. So the problem with my way of playing is I'm not looking for an ace. I can't look for an ace playing that way, right? Because I haven't thinned the field, and there could be lots of other things. Playing your way, an ace is wonderful, right?
Right.
So I think I need my Broadway cards or my spades to be excited about this flop, and you really just need an ace. So I guess in some ways that's makes your way better, right?
Well, the other thing too is that my way, I'm trying to thin the field, and I'm trying to play the people, not the cards. But the ace 10 is nice to fall back on. You know, yep. I'm not trying to play cards here. I'm playing position. I'm playing the people. These people are here to have a good time. They don't care if they lose money. They're already showing that they have some money because they're on a cruise vacation. In my experience playing, when before we even started our own company doing this, the few times that I played poker on a ship when it wasn't our cruise, they're just horrible. Most of the time it was a limit poker, but when they did play no limit, they're absolutely horrible.
Right.
So I'm going to play the people here and not just my cards. So I'm going to marry those two things together and make a nice little raise here.
All right. So O'Malley plays Scott Poker here and calls.
Hmm.
Small blind completes, big blind checks. Seven players the flop with squiggly 14 in the pot.
Wow.
Flop is the ace of clubs, jack of diamonds, deuce of clubs, and it's checked around to the middle position player who bets $6. He's described as loose, mostly passive, but can be the aggressor. He says, however, when he is aggressive, he doesn't step too far out of line. He isn't a maniac. And he started the hand with $100, and one player calls before it gets to us.
See, now this is what I'm talking about. We hit our ace, too, and we haven't thinned the field at all. So any cards can be out. All right, so we got 12 more, so it's like 26 in the pot, I mean. So
it's squiggly 25 right now.
Yeah, because, you got to remember, the cruise ship takes their 105% out of the pot. So
I just don't know when they take it out.
So. Yeah. All right, so I don't know. I feel like we got one caller and one better, so I don't know if I want to be three-handed with this either or not. It's tough because now we haven't done anything to distinguish their hands or ours because we limped. So to take advantage of this now, I mean, people might believe you if you raise, and we have an ace. You know, we have a pretty good ace. And if somebody had a better ace, probably would have maybe made a raise pre-flop. If somebody had an ace-jack, we're crushed. If they have ace-queen or ace-king, we're crushed. But if they had those hands in this kind of a game, you might see a raise. It's hard to say. All right. Well, I'm gonna raise it up just because, as opposed to raising it down. just because I'm not comfortable playing multi-way.
We're gonna slow it down now.
Close. Let's see.
Bet $1. Let's get this game down a little bit.
Let's make it 25.
You know what? It's just funny because when you were talking there, I was trying to think because I go back to what I was saying before the flop. If you're playing my way, you don't want to see an ace, right?
Yeah.
And that's exactly what we got. There's no spades here. Obviously, we got a really backdraw, straight draw.
Backdoor, yeah.
Backdoor, yeah. So this is not really what I was hoping for the way I played it. This would be a great flop for us had we played it your way, right?
Mm, yeah.
So then I started thinking, I'm like, all right, but really this guy's turned this game into a limit game right now. It's $6 into a $25 pot, right?
Right.
So it's tempting to call that $6 and hope I hit my 10. But the problem with hitting that 10 now is, you know, it's a cruise ship, so somebody with a king, queen, if you're around, that 10's not what you want, right? So, but, you know, after hearing you talk, you're right. If any of these people had a bigger ace than we did, they would have raised. They had to, I think, right?
Yeah.
Although we still got the blinds involved, but they checked this thing. So, at that point, all of a sudden now, even though I wasn't hoping for an ace the way I was playing it, I think my ace is good right now.
The only thing I'm afraid of is an ace-deuce, like an ace-deuce of hearts or something. It's the only thing I'm afraid of.
Right. But regardless, we have to raise here. We have to figure out, you know, and if it goes crazy after that, you know, but it gets back to us and it's, you know, six people in for the $100, then we know we're not good, right?
Right. Well, we're on the button, so there can only be three, right? This is it. We close out the betting, so.
Well, if we call, but if we raise.
Right, no. But, I mean, the other people, when the middle position, so it checked to the middle position guy, so there's still people behind us left to act. Is that what you're telling me?
No, we're on the button, but if we raise the $6, now the blinds are, it opens the betting up again, right?
All right, so it went check, and then the middle position guy bet, because there's seven people in this hand. It's hard to keep track of who's still left behind us. So the blinds are still alive. So, yeah, so we still have a bunch of, even if we call.
Six, we shut this down, which I guess you could say that's interesting and just see what happens. And that if you're playing that way, then you're playing for your 10, right?
Because he could still get back to you as a raise. Somebody could be check raising here, too.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
If we made this 20 or something, right?
Right.
And then somebody after us, it doesn't matter who it is, could be the guy that already bet, right? Makes it 100.
Yeah.
We have a couple more callers before it gets to us, and we know we're dead, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's why we have to raise that. We got to figure out who's serious about the spot and who isn't.
Yeah, because $6 is nothing. So if we just call, we're going to get other guys who might say, oh, $6? Sure, I might as well try to hit that gutter.
You know, strong.
Yeah. And yeah, it's all kinds of stuff. So for $6, it's too cheap. We got to raise it. So I made it 25. What do you think?
I like that, too. I think that's great.
Cool.
All right. So we decided to raise to 15.
That's not a lot. That's not a lot. Because let's say generally the standard rule is three times the bet. But now we have a limper and we have a caller, I mean. So three times six is already 18. Another six to that is 24. We were $3 short just of a standard bet. There's only one guy betting with us. We're heads up. So I think that's kind of cheap. I mean, what are you trying to accomplish with a $15 raise to 15? Nine more dollars to... Are you stringing this guy along because you're positive you have him beat? I mean, to me, I want to thin this field. $15 is not a lot of money on a cruise ship.
Right, yeah.
Drunkards, too. Drunkards.
Drunkards. Love that word, drunkard. I'm better drunk. When you see me stumbling on the cruise ship, don't say, hey, there's Scott, that he's a drunk. Call me a drunkard.
Please. Yeah, there goes that drunkard from Annie Up.
I feel like a Revolutionary War guy with a big stein of beer. He's a drunkard.
What a drunkard.
No, I think we need to be more. But it turns out that the middle position player, who is the one that's been leading the action, is our only caller. Everyone else folds.
See, he's so in tune. With his surroundings, whereas we're going into this cold. But
it's crazy that the guy that was on this cruise ship and in this hand knows players better than us.
Yes. But I do think that that's still a mistake. I still think it's not the proper play. But
it's a mistake, but it worked out for us.
So good. So he's risking less money.
All right, squiggly $50 in the pot, and the turn is the ace of hearts. So our board now is ace of clubs, jack of diamonds, deuce of clubs, ace of hearts. We got trips now, but it's not a card. It's one of those great cards where our hand improves, but I don't know if it actually improved our odds of winning.
Right.
And the middle position player, not scared, bets $20.
I'm calling. That's fine. Now I'm happy with, because it didn't really change much, but we got the guy to call. So now we're saying, okay, what is this guy calling with? I don't think he's drawing in betting. So I'm happy to just show down my ace with this guy. I'm hoping he doesn't shove on the end, but I have a pretty decent kicker.
Oh, yeah, but here's the other thing, too, is he only has like $50 left.
Yeah.
So at this point, to me, it seems like you're right. We'll see how this goes. We'll call here, and he's, you know, so on the river. I mean, at that point, we could figure out what we need to do, but there's no reason for us to raise here because he's got his crush. He's obviously going to call, right?
Right.
Let's take the $20 and hope that either we hit our 10 or we're good or he doesn't bet if we're not good or whatever. There's all kinds of things that could happen.
Right.
And raising here is a bad one, I think.
So. Yeah, I think it's the right call to just call. The right call.
All right. So he says he only has squiggly 50, but again, I only have squiggly 75 and can't really fold trip aces here. I also can't find a justification for raising. So I guess I'm calling for a value. Not a great move in hold'em, but sometimes it's the right move, and I think it is here, even though I'm pretty sure he's going to shove any card that comes.
Maybe.
About what we said, but yeah. So squiggly 90 in the pot, and the river is the four of hearts. So our final board is ace of clubs, jack of diamonds, deuce clubs, ace of hearts, four of hearts, and the middle position player thinks for a while before shoving.
Yeah, it's $50 to win 100, so it's 150. It's 50 to 150, 3 to 1, your money with trip aces and a decent kicker. I don't think I can get away from it. This guy didn't make any flush draws. No, the wheel got there, but there's no way this guy was betting the wheel that way. The only thing we were hoping for is that, we're hoping against that he doesn't have a better kicker than us or filled up, like with ace four in his hand or something. So it's conceivable this guy's going to have ace deuce or ace four and we're screwed.
Right, absolutely.
Well, ace deuce or ace four. So, but I can't narrow it that much to fold here. $50 to win 150. So, and I got three aces with a 10, so I'm going to call.
And we already decided at the beginning of the hand that if he had, ace jack, ace king, ace queen, he would have raised, right?
Yeah.
So.
I'm going to go on a limb and say it's the same hand. Just try. I'm going to try to see if it's the same hand. Just guessing.
That would be awesome.
Yeah.
Well, it would be awesome, but. All right, so O'Malley says, I think he would have raised ace-king or ace-queen pre-flop. He probably would have checked to show weakness and slow play at some point with ace-jack. So ultimately, I think the hands we're losing to are pocket deuces, pocket fours, ace-four, or ace-deuce.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm beating something like king-jack, queen-jack, maybe, but unlikely. Also some kind of ace-rag for weaker trips, but it could also possibly be the same hand, ace-ten.
Yeah.
Boy, who just said that?
Yeah, I heard that somewhere. It's like an echo in here. echo.
All right, so he thinks for a while before deciding to call, and the opponent smiles and said he wanted to get good seats for the comedian at 10.
Oh!
Down king of clubs, 10 of clubs. And he said he told me a nice call and got up and left.
Wow! I mean, they're draws, but I didn't think he'd be betting a draw. I mean, it's a big, huge, fantastic draw.
He wanted to get good seats for that comedian. So.
Wow. See, that's what I'm saying. You just can't put these people on quality play. I'm on a ship like this. You just can't. We need more Anti-Up Nation people to come on our cruises. You got to see these people. They love to play like this. It's unbelievable.
Well,
they're on vacation.
The point that there's a lot else to consider there because, from just your normal poker room, obviously in your normal poker room, you don't know what people going on in their lives anyhow, but on a cruise ship, there's a lot more going on in their lives, I promise you. Because, you've got somebody like O'Malley here who is just one night on the cruise that the wife's letting them play, right? So
right.
That plays into how he plays. You've got, something going on, every 5 minutes on a cruise ship somewhere around there that somebody probably wants to go to. So you make these kind of moves like this. Maybe you had a, bottle of wine at dinner and you're a little saucy now. There's all kinds of stuff happening on a cruise ship that doesn't happen in IRL. Look at that.
Totes my goats. Why did you bring up the Indy Racing League? I don't understand. This is the poker show. No, but you're absolutely right. These guys, there's people there who that this is their vacation and they're going to spend money and they're going to be entertained and they're
exactly
going to try to emulate the people they see on TV when they play poker and they're trying to bluff. But this guy wasn't really, he was betting a huge draw. And when it didn't get there, he said, I can't win without betting, so I'm going to bet, hope you fold. And it just didn't work out.
It's kind of interesting how he played it, though. I mean, he got into our head a little bit, I think, right? So he bet out and we decided we needed to raise and then he just called. Right.
Yeah.
And then he's like, "Screw it! That ace comes, I'm betting into you."
Yeah, that turn bet was interesting. That did get in our head a little bit.
So at that point, he probably went from he was trying to kind of bluff bet the flop, and then we raised, and we really didn't raise a lot, which is what we talked about, right? So
right.
I actually opened him up to hitting that gutter, and so at that point, then he sees an ace come, and he's like, "All right, I'm going to represent that," and then we got all weirded out. Not enough to get out of the hand, but and then he had a chance at that point to still hit that gutter. So,
wow,
interesting.
Wow. Well,
and I think at that end, he's probably like, "Man, I really wish I would have 200 behind, right?
Yeah,
instead of 50.
Yeah, because then he could have put more pressure on him or gotten away from it too. The other thing too is I think the way O'Malley played, he got max value of this hand. Because if he re-raises pre-flop, the guy probably calls with king 10 out of position. I don't know. Because if he played the rest, if he played this way the whole way, maybe he's
sure
ignorant. Yeah. But then if we had made it 25, maybe he folds that draw instead of 15, which is only 9 more. Maybe, who knows. And if we shove on him on the turn, maybe he lets it go there. So, I mean, really, I think that was max value for O'Malley. I don't know how you get – I don't know if you can get that guy's whole stack any other way.
Max value. Pretty close to max value, but he's going to have to be in the fourth row of the comedian show because this guy's going to beat him there.
Financially, yeah. He got max value out of the hand.
Because I know he's going to get to the comedian show and the guy's going to go, hey, you took that pot off me, but look at my seats, buddy.
Winning.
Because, you know, everybody wants to be in the first couple rows for a cruise ship comedian.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, the dirty comedian. That's the one. It's the late one where you can go and really laugh and enjoy yourself. The clean act is not worth fourth row.
Oh, man, I love it.
Don't forget, antiupmagazine.com/Pearl River. Scott's there all week. Main event this weekend. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the table.
Anti Up is a production of antiupmagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@antiupmagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@antiupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.